Good morning, everybody, and thank you very much for joining me this morning, which is with what I hope is a informative presentation. This presentation was delivered as part of a financial standard program that we ran as part of their CPD program. And what I wanted to do when I created this presentation was really look at how a business would create a culture and create a process that allowed a full transition to managed accounts. That is not just looking at changing managed funds to managed accounts, but looking at the whole program. And hopefully that the change management considerations that we'll go through today, they're obviously focused in this presentation on managed accounts, but hopefully we'll give you some insight just generally into your practice and how to consider big change management projects and think about a structure that you might be able to actually bring to your wider team. So what we're going to look at first is understanding change management, and we will look at it, obviously, as I said, from a managed account view. We're going to look at what considerations, I think, practices, and through my observations and working with the team and working with clients that I've seen are some of the things that practices have not considered in the whole scope of this type of change. And then I just want to finally, just for the last couple of minutes of the presentation, just really talk about some of the research that we've done of where a successful transition to managed accounts has made significant change to a number of practices. So to kick off the presentation, those who know me, I quite like a quote. And this is one of my most favorite quotes. "It's not the strongest of the species that survives, nor the most intelligent, but the one most responsive to change," which is given to Charles Darwin. There's a debate as to whether it is. It doesn't really matter. The point is, it's a great quote. And adaptability is something that financial planning practices have no choice but to try and be. They must be adaptive. We're in a massive change all the time. I've been in Australia 20 years now, and the change that we've gone through has been dramatic. And on a number of fronts, whether it's client, legislation, technology, financial, it doesn't matter. We've been through these huge amounts of change. And practices need to embrace change. Without the right level of change thought process in your business, how can you navigate the future? And I've just been on a podcast with a professional planner and one of our clients. And one of the things that I talked about was those businesses are successful are those that have built a culture where the practice is ready for change. And if it's ready for change and it has all the team on board for that change, when we navigate a storm like we have through the pandemic, the practice is ready to embrace it. And I don't mean functionally, I mean culturally, psychologically, that people are ready. They know change is coming and we're ready to adapt. People realize that, right, there's something happening. I must take ownership and accountability at this moment in time without having everything spoon-fed to me. So everybody takes on a leadership role inside the practice. And that's what I want to really instill in this presentation, is how to get your whole team, how to get your whole business engaging, and it not just being a practice principle change for some very small reasonings. So think about that adaptability and challenge yourself as we go through the presentation. Think about your practice and say, how adaptable has it? When we've gone through change, did my whole business come on the journey with me? Did my clients come on the journey with me? Or were there some stumbling points along the way? And think about how we might be able to adapt that. So if you think about change management and you think about that adaptability, one of the things to think about is what can it involve and who are the key stakeholders? And these are the real things that drive change. We're always looking when you're going through a change management, and if you think about managed accounts, technology partners, we're looking always to new technology partners. There are more than 50 fintech providers in Australia currently helping in the advice process. And in fact, we've got the RegTech coming soon, which is entering our world, which is about compliance and AI and how that might help from a practice perspective. So technology plays a very big part in change. And what you've got to be able to do is identify what that technology might be, who they are, how that might help my practice. The advice model. When we're looking at our advice model, our technology partner when we choose a managed account provider is going to dictate to a point what our advice model looks like. Who am I using? What type of model managers am I using? And we'll talk a little bit about investment philosophy in a little while. But your advice model is going to adapt, and it's going to be partly dictated by the model manager. It's going to be partly dictated by the technology provider, and it will be definitely adapted by your business model and what you're looking to achieve. So understanding the change in your advice model and understanding there's going to be one. And one of the things that is really important when we talk to people about managed accounts is often they've thought about the investment component, changing managed fund to managed fund A to a managed account. But what they haven't considered is how does that adapt my advice model? It's been a very internal view. And it's all about reduction of ROA and it's all about efficiencies, which is obviously part of the process. But it's going to change your advice model. If you don't change the way you interact with your clients, then only one component of the transition and the change is going to be taken into account. What we are seeing in this sector is a change of providers. There is a number of non-traditional asset managers that have entered this market. We've had a growth of these independent asset managers bringing real specialist skill to the market. But if you don't understand how you're going to adapt to those and understand who they are and put some of these pieces together, then it's going to be quite a tough journey. So considering that these non-traditional asset managers will play a part will help you start to get ready for what it might involve. And it will always change the client experience. Technology, and particularly if you consider platforms, you're now looking to find a managed account provider. Platforms play a big part in how you interact with your client. Traditional platforms, wraps and master trusts, were business tools. They were not as focused on the client engagement experience. What you've seen in the last 5 years, and particularly actually a little bit longer since the GFC, you've seen technology open up to the client experience. You've seen a lot more focus on investor portals. You've seen a lot more focus on reporting, dynamic reporting environments, the ability for connectivity of the client online. All of these things are about the client engagement experience. And you need to understand what that experience might be before you start this journey and know that this is one of those key things that you've got to consider. When we look at the stakeholders in a business, there is always going to be the advisor. The advisor is a major stakeholder in whether or not managed accounts are used or not. Now, that's going to be their personal belief system. That's going to be linked to the type of asset manager they want to use. But another stakeholder in that process could be the advisor, who is also the principal. But if they're separate, you are going to have the principal who's going to have some very strong overarching business principles around why this change is needed. But that principal needs to then understand, am I an advisor as part of this process? And as an advisor, separate to my principal being a principal, as an advisor, what are my stakeholder considerations? And if I am the principal and I've got employed advisors, then I need to understand what those employed advisors, what their stakeholder management is or stakeholder benefits of moving to this environment. The client plays a massive part and is often missed in this process. Lots of decisions, and we'll address this as the presentation goes on, are made around advice that's going to impact or processes that will impact the client, but they're done and then subsequently presented to the client. So making sure that when you're thinking about change management in a managed account view, that you're considering what does this mean to the client? How am I going to use this solution, how I'm going to change my business that will ensure this stakeholder, and let's face it, at the end of the day, we're in business to solve client problems, that this stakeholder is taken into account as much as my business, because it's going to dictate the technology partner you choose. It's going to dictate the type of advice model you're following. It's going to dictate the client engagement, and dependent on your investment philosophy, it is going to dictate which asset manager you use. So it's really important that you put them at the forefront of your thought process. And support staff. Support staff are very integral to any change in your business. But in managed accounts, you must bring them on the journey. you're looking at a whole change. We have some clients who change onto the premium platform, and one of the consideration what we then have is support staff says, I don't know why we change platform providers. What they don't understand is the bigger picture. They don't understand why the new technology has been used, why we're moving to managed accounts, and they're just left to process. But actually engaging them, encouraging them, educating them, making sure they're on board makes this a much better process. And some of the research that we've shown and that we've delivered is that, and if you haven't seen our research from Business Health, then please go on our website and download it. But 75%, and I will talk to you about at the end about some of these statistics, but of those practices that have embraced managed accounts for more than 75% of their clients. So they've considered the whole involvement, they've considered all stakeholders, and they've embraced it as a business, have 84% more profit than those that don't recommend managed accounts. So there is some significant incentive to making this change, but also making this change to as wide a group of people as possible. But without the right change management process, and without understanding how you're going to do that, and it doesn't have to be done up front. It can be, as we'll talk about, part of an ongoing process to convert clients at the right time, manageable by your clients. But if your goal is to achieve 85% more profit, then it's looking at this as a whole of practice experience. So if we move to, well, what are the actual considerations? Firstly, is defining and detailing your business model. Second, understanding your customer. Making sure, again, this is all about stakeholder management, understanding who your customer is and what you need to do. Create a change management plan. Engage your clients in the process, and particularly engage them early as part of your onboarding process. And I don't mean just once it's time to transition. I mean before the process, as you're going through it. Engage your team and then manage the project slowly and expect setbacks. And these are just six considerations. None of these actually are really around managed accounts. As the core principles, you can take these principles and say, what am I going to do in my business that's going to take a dramatic change? And then what you do is use these six principles to overlay it. All we've done is I've taken these principles and tried to give them a managed account flavor for you today. So if you think about defining and detailing your business model, I spent 3.5 years at a licensee and through just after the GFC and through FOFA. And my role was as head of business development and marketing. Part of my role was the practice management. So I went out and saw a lot of practices. I helped them look at their business models. And one of the hardest things was defining a business model, really understanding what the practice is trying to achieve. And it's a little bit funny because business consultants talk around corporatizing your business. Yet it's a bit of a strange dichotomy because the other side of the equation is, well, I don't want to be in a large business, and that's why I've set up my small SME, my SME or my business with a partner, because I don't want to be constrained by some of those rules and regulations. I want the flexibility. And that is absolutely correct. But the reality is there are some really, really core things that we need to do, even if we are running our own business. We don't need to corporatize our business in its totality unless we are large enough. And I'm not arguing the fact that actually some of the more successful practices in Australia have actually corporatized their business, but they've still corporatized them while retaining that family, that localized feel, that flexible feel. They've just used some really core theories and processes that a large business needs to have to run in order to help the smaller business navigate the storms through as much as the large businesses can. And one of the things you've got to think about when you're looking at defining your business model and why it's really important is customer needs are changing, you know, and these aren't things that I'm saying to you that should be a surprise, but there are things that you should make sure you've really thought about in every time. The needs are changing rapidly. Demographics are changing. So what we've seen is not only are we're looking at, say, for example, millennials. The oldest millennial now is 40. So we've for a very long time debated as an industry as to whether or not we should or shouldn't have millennials as part of our client base. Now, millennials need a lot of different, they need different things. You know, they're very focused on transparency and having a bit of control. They're very focused on technology and being able to see what their portfolio is investing in. They're very focused on ESG. These are all things that if you're going to make a change into managed accounts from a business model, like a traditional business model, you must understand not what you're navigating today for your current clients, but you want to future-proof your business. You want to make sure it can navigate not only the storm that comes through like a pandemic, but it can navigate the change in the future, the five-year vision. Because even if you're looking to remove yourself from the industry and retire in 5 years or 10 years, your business needs to be able to be handed on to somebody else. And therefore, it needs to be able to navigate that change. And the only way we can navigate that change is by delivering output and delivering advice models and engagement models and benefits and solutions to the right demographic. And also, what has been shown through this pandemic is that demographics are changing in terms of the thought process around how each demographic will interact with a practice, how surprised most practices have been at their clients' comfort of engaging them in tech from a technology perspective. Now, that's not everybody, but there are a lot more than we would have thought. Now, a lot of advisors out there are saying, this has surprised me because I didn't believe my clients would engage this. We've had the same thing on the platform front because the reality is we do have an older client advisor base in the industry in general, and while some people have engaged parts of technology, there is still, as there should be, a human component to what we do, meeting face to face. But people have embraced, through circumstances, online Zooms and webinars and meetings far easier than we would have been able to do it previously. If we'd mentioned this time last year, people said, wait until you come to my area and come and see me. We're now seeing the efficiencies. We're now seeing it's not that uncomfortable to be online. And our clients are changing, and demographics are changing, and the customer needs are changing because other industries are driving change that we need to be aware of. Technology is changing. I mentioned before, platforms of old were business tools that were about business efficiencies, whereas new technology, new fintechs are all about the client. They're putting the client as high up the chain as the business itself. It doesn't remove the fact that we're trying to find business efficiencies, but it is all about making sure the client as a stakeholder is there. And we've got to keep it. Now, if we don't know our business model and we haven't defined it and our staff don't know it and our clients don't know it and we're looking, we can be, as an industry, a little bit blinded by this new shiny toy. Technology becomes the driver rather than the business model. And the technology should just be the facilitator of what you would like to achieve. It's like the tail wagging the dog. What we've got at the moment is a very reactionary environment where new technology comes out and we try and retrofit it into the business. We always need to look at our business and say, what is our business trying to achieve? And then go and source the technology second. And what that means is, in the way that we do have in the industry at the moment, is that there is still a little bit of a tactical approach. There is still this sort of, we'll meet the pandemic when it comes to us. We'll sell our business when we're ready to sell our business. We'll change technology when it comes across my desk. The reality is, good, strong, strategic business planning is how you can drive change and how you can actually make sure you're keeping up. And this is a Rico, who are operational specialist, did some research, and they said that only 40% of SMEs in Australia have enough clarity around required systems and processes. Now, that means that there is a lot of activity taking place, but not a lot of planning. There's a lot of hope. There's jumping at shadows. There's reacting to new technology. But really, the cornerstone to ensure your business can grow and can go through this change, ensure you choose the right technology partner and you choose the right asset manager, is by understanding your business model and what you're trying to achieve on behalf of your clients and on behalf of your business and on behalf of your staff. If you've got all that in place, then you'll have a much easier approach of being able to dismiss the shiny toy syndrome. So we've looked at defining your business model, and that in itself is a presentation of how to do that. But just think about that, and that's your starting point, and you should do that first. But second consideration is understanding your customer. We call this the client engagement iceberg. This isn't a managed account iceberg. This is an advice iceberg. And what this is saying is that how much of the activity that takes place in a business happens underwater, where the client doesn't value it. What we need to do is understand who our customer is and what do they value. And then we should be looking at it as how do we deliver value that can then generate revenue and increase profit? Because what we do have is this sort of mantra of planning practices have been built on often what the principal likes to do. And over time, it's been about building portfolios, and it's been around about whether that's managed fund, whether that's passive, active or passive, managed fund equities. Often, though, what's driven those decisions has been a planner's decision, the advice decision. But actually, what we've got to do now is we've got to look at the customer. What does the customer want? And there's some really tough questions to ask ourselves around what do our clients value? And we've got lots of client engagement presentations. It's a passion of mine. And that's one of the things I talked all the time when I was at the licensee level trying to advise practices, was you're doing a lot of work you can't charge for because your client doesn't value it correctly. You need to outsource or stop doing all the non-strategic value propositions in your business and only focus on what the clients value. And when you think about that as to what do clients value and how does that customer interact with you, you can then start thinking about things like, you know, what is it that my customers want from me? So these are some statistics to show some examples. 40% of customers today prefer self-service, and 50% believe advisors should have a digital solution. That doesn't mean a static website saying who you are, what you do, what services you provide. It's about how do you provide them connectivity to their portfolio, to their value proposition, what you're delivering to them. That doesn't mean you need to be a tech company. That means that you need to understand what your specific client base wants, what their demographic is, what their connectivity requirements are, and build a self-service environment by utilizing platforms, by utilizing the fintechs that are out there, but making sure you're choosing the right technology to deliver what your clients want. And I'll talk a little bit about clients later in the presentation. And I've already mentioned the millennials, but 75% of the workforce by 2025 are going to be millennials. This isn't a big issue for people now who are managing retirement portfolios, but the problem with those that have a very strong focus on retirement is you have a very aging client base. This is things we talk about all the time. And it's all about, again, as I said, future-proofing your business and understanding how, if I'm going to go through this change, can managed accounts allow me to diversify my book? That doesn't mean you just do business with anybody, but that does mean that you can change and adapt to the way you do business, the way you add value. And if you move the client to the top of the triangle and actually work out what client problems are you solving, what client value proposition do they want from you, you're going to have a much more successful business model, and will also allow you to make sure you're choosing all the right components when you move across to your managed, or when you're doing the managed account transition. And this is all about doing it slowly and making sure you're doing it in a controlled manner. Because if you think about the managed account journey or any change in your business, it's like the sporting environment. You can have people who kick goals in AFL, you can have people in rugby who are scoring goals, and you can have people at cricket who are scoring runs. The reality is they're the end product of a series of decisions that have been made, a series of processes. In a footy and a rugby analogy, the ball must get from the back of the pitch up to the goal area before anything can happen, before the guys who are going to kick the goals or the people who are going to score the tries. There needs to have been process. There needs to have been other people involved to help that happen. And that's what this is all about. Before you reach the client is understanding what it is you're trying to achieve. And customers have little interest in stuff that you go through. The issues that you face, for example, making that takes 10 hours, 15 hours to do an SOA, they're concerned with the value they're receiving from the advice process. That doesn't mean they don't value your business. It means that they value what they get from you. So all that stuff underwater is if your practice is spending an inordinate amount of time doing it, and your client doesn't value it, it's a very tactical activity and not a strategic part of the relationship with your client. So once you've thought about your customer, who's your customer, and what do they value, you can then start also moving to consideration three, which is about creating a change management plan. So I've got my business model, I understand who my customer is, and now to create the framework for my change management plan. And when documenting your plan, what should you consider? And we've talked about them, a couple of them already. What will your business look like post the change? You've got to have a vision. You've got to see something. Otherwise, you're throwing darts into the wood or the forest or the bush. What does your business look like post this change? What am I trying to aim to achieve? Why are you doing this, and how will it support your investment advice model? And one of the things that's really interesting when you're looking at managed accounts is also there's a lot of people do it where they choose the asset manager and they retrofit how they then will provide that information to their client. The advice model, the type of advice model that you want to deliver, and the investment philosophy that you want to follow, and we've actually got a presentation in a month or so on the investment philosophy, so I'd encourage you to come and join that. The investment philosophy is an anchor for your whole business, for every advisor in your business. And if you haven't got a strong investment philosophy and you haven't defined it and understand what that advice model, it will be really hard to choose the right asset manager, and you might find yourself bunny hopping between asset managers over a number of years. What are the benefits? I talked about the stakeholders before. Who are the stakeholders? But really importantly is defining what those benefits are and understanding what it is you're needing to achieve. What are the technology needs that you're going to have to solve those benefits to the stakeholders, to support your investment and your advice model, to deliver what your business looks like? And then work out what the universe of providers are that you need to review. What tasks through that process will need to be done, and we'll talk about that in a moment, and who will be assigned the responsibility. And one of the considerations talks about how to engage the team and how to make that work for you. And I'm in a moment, I'll give you a little bit of a guide. Setting milestones that progress you to hit as you progress through the project. These aren't just milestones that are about whether you're successful or not. They're milestones at certain points of time that will allow you to manage your progress, your project successfully. And they'll allow you to keep balance, to feel like you're in control, and would also allow you to not skip ahead. If you haven't reached a certain milestone, you stop the project until such time it's achieved, and then you move forward. And you don't have a project that's got different components further ahead than the rest. And the whole team, your ability to run your business successfully, your ability to still service your clients, your ability for your staff to feel comfortable, using milestones, which I'll talk about in a moment, will be really significant for you. And at the end, you do need, if you've put what your post at the beginning, what your business will look like, what are the measurable goals once the project is finished? Is there a new profit level? Is there some qualitative efficiencies that you wanted to achieve? Are there new clients that you wanted to attract? What is it that are measurable goals that have achieved once you finish this project? So I just want you to think about this milestone, and I just want to give you a little bit of a guide here, and just think very creatively, just for a moment, and imagine that you're doing a team building exercise, and there's a field, and there's a series of gates, and at each gate you have to do something, and until you've achieved that set of activities or done whatever the activity is that's required, the gate won't open. It won't allow you to the next stage. And that's how good project management works. It works via a series of gates that keeps you in control. And you don't move, or you can't move to the next gate. You create a structure which doesn't allow you to move to the next gate until such time as you've achieved what you agreed to achieve at that time frame. And then once you get through all the gates, your team has achieved its goals. So if you think about that from a business sense, we're going to start that gate one was that we've decided that we want to go into managed accounts. What do we need to do in between gate one and gate two? And these are just some examples. Your business will have much more in between these gates, and they'll be very specific to you. These are just examples. But in between gate one and two, the partners need to define the business model and project outcomes. So you must do what I talked about there, which is defining everything. Make sure you understand as business owners what it is you're trying to achieve and what the project is trying to achieve at the end. And then at that point, the partners need to present to the team. So we need to have got the team involved in this process. And we're not rushing talking to asset managers before we've told the team what we're trying to achieve. At gate two, and again, these timeframes are different for everybody. At gate two, what we then might do, because we've now got the team involved, we've got their buy-in, we've done the series of questions and answers, we've challenged their concerns and answered their concerns for them. So what we now want to do is we want to engage that team. So we want the team to workshop what the key barriers and benefits might be to your project. We might want the investment committee to assess the advice model so that we understand what it is we're trying to we're doing. This is now all the proof work. We're just doing some of the theory around what we're trying to achieve. Only once we've done that can we move to gate three. And at gate three, we then might want to start thinking, right, well, we now know what our barriers and our benefits are. We know what our advice model, our client engagement model might look like. We know what clients we're trying to attract. So now what we need is the back office to work on what are the technology needs to deliver from their perspective, their client engagement requirements, and their back office requirements. Once that's done in this process, that can be handed over to the partners to think about the tech providers that might actually deliver on that for them. And then you might also have advisors and partners looking at the client communication strategy of which, how are you going to deliver this to clients? And I don't say in this part, you don't engage your whole team, because I think one thing that we don't do, and I'll talk about in a moment, is engage our team often deeply enough in terms of projects. We make decisions and then subsequently we get them involved. Well, if we get them involved in the first place, we can make the process a whole lot more seamless. We can add dates at each of these gates as well, which is what I was talking about in terms of manageable stages when I talked about key milestones. So what you could say is at gate one, between gate one and two, by the 1st of September, you want to do everything in between gate one and two. Between gate two and three, you've got another month that you want to get those components done. And then there's another month with gate three. And then you're moving on to gate four, gate five, gate six. And dependent on how much detail there is between each gate will dictate the time. But one of the things that's really important is why this is a really strong structure to use is that if something goes wrong, something happens, there's an industry event, there's a practice event, whatever it is, that you can actually just move the dates of the gates. You can adjust accordingly. You can work with your team that they know their roles, they've assigned to deliver and what timeframe, but the project can just move with your business. If you're finding that the predictions you made between each gate were a little bit adventurous, you can move them. And therefore, you're always in control, your whole team is in control, and everybody knows what they need to do between which gates and by what timeframe. And it's a much more controlled process in the business. So once we've got our plan, one of the things that we don't do as an industry is engage clients. We make business decisions. Now, I'm not saying your clients need to be asked if you make a change, but I am saying that actually, if you engage your clients and engage them early, bring your clients on that journey with you, they can help the process. They can make sure that you're going to have a successful transition when you start to do it. So if you educate early, you can have things like educational newsletters. Make sure you're writing to your clients, explaining what you're about to do, and explaining why you're doing it and the process that you're going to follow, and possibly even when you're going to deliver it to them, in terms of their review process. Looking at webinars and seminars and information sessions with your clients one-on-one, dependent on your circumstances with your clients and your comfort level, which is all around engaging them, explaining to them. One of the most successful transitions I did in a previous life when I was with Skandia was a practice did a whole transition. And what we did was we did an educational newsletter followed up by a seminar with a, it was a bit of the old days, so a golf day. Well, he paid for all his clients. We didn't pay for it, his key clients to have a game of golf. And then he did a presentation that night about what we're doing, why we're doing it. I did a little bit of a presentation on who we were. And the statement was, if it's right for you at your review time, this is what we're going to be doing, but we'll do it on an individual basis. That meant everybody was ready for those that discussion at that t as soon as their review came round, they knew the discussion was coming up. There was no change. You weren't having to do it on the spot, explaining to somebody about what managed accounts. So that education is really important. And then surveys, once you've done this sort of educational component, is survey your clients and get an initial reaction. Make sure you are on the right track with your clients. Then you've got focus groups and beta testing. You know, again, really good, strong business decisions are around making sure that you go slowly. Use focus groups and beta testing. Take small segmented groups, workshop your strategy, discuss the benefits, make sure that you've, for each of those segments, so just from a simple basis, say you've got your ABC clients or your gold, silver, bronze clients. For each segment, think about what it means to that segment. What is the value you're delivering? Workshop that strategy with each of those segments and make sure that they understand and you're getting that initial feedback. Then from those segments, beta test those different client groups. Don't rush at it. Make sure that you're putting a true pilot. We get people who say, I'm going to put a case with you. But often there's no strategy around why we've got that case. Well, what's the success? Why are you doing this? Is it for just that client type? So there's a $300,000 application. That's great. What about your $1 million? What about your $50,000? Whatever your differentials are. Beta testing is about making sure you get a full view of your whole clients that you can also articulate back to everybody who wasn't in the beta testing and the focus group. And also assess the advice docs, tech delivery. You're able to then navigate your way through, because when you're thinking about technology, it is always different and there's always change. So engaging staff and clients within that will be really successful for you. And providing regular and clear updates to all clients as you're going through the process, making sure you're constantly engaging. And by doing this, you're going to make sure that the onboarding is seamless. Your clients are going to be able to understand what you're doing. And as you're doing this small focus groups, that doesn't mean the wider group doesn't know what's happening, but everybody will be engaged. Lastly, in terms of the people, is engaging your teams. So OC Tanner, a global recognition organization, they did this culture report that says, if you get your clients and engage your team on special projects, they'll have a 20% increase in job satisfaction. 75% of your employees feel more special, feel that special projects make them feel that they develop skills they don't get in their day-to-day role. If you engage and empower your team for a project and say, I need you to make this successful, they feel more part of the business. If you say, I need you to do this, I'm doing this, or we're doing this, you need to retrofit it, they feel they're pushed into it. And these are human characteristics on a number of fronts, but getting them involved early in the project will have major benefits for your job satisfaction and development skills for your clients. And also, they're going to be able to identify barriers to success that you're unaware of. They're the ones that are building processes and procedures around some of the limitations they've currently got. They know what their current technology provider and their advice model when they're dealing with clients. They know what works well. They know what doesn't. So engaging the team, making sure you've done full workshop, is going to mean you identify barriers early. You're going to minimize future administration issues because they're part of the process and going to help you select the right providers. There will be tech providers, it says here, and it will reduce time to delivery because you'll have less stoppages because things don't go quite to plan. So engaging your team is really important. And your messaging to clients then becomes more consistent and positive. Because if you think about the worst outcome, if your team aren't engaged and your clients are unaware, you're going to have confused clients, disconnected employees, and it's going to be a little bit of a running through quicksand to get this moving. And what you want in this process, even if you're doing it on a review by review basis, you're not doing a very big, massive transition, you still need to make sure it's quick. And the final consideration is manage the project slowly. Expect setbacks. Follow a considered change management plan. There will be setbacks. Have a culture inside your business that is 20/20 hindsight free, which means you allow your staff to know that if things don't go right, they put their hand up quickly and they tell you what's happening. You engage them and say things won't go well. They will be willing to open up a lot more about what's happening. They're not going to hide things from you. They're going to be part of this process. So if you do everything we've just talked about in process, manage the project slowly, expect those setbacks, you'll find actually, surprisingly, going more slowly will actually mean you'll pick up speed as the transition goes on, because as you go through those first stages, they'll be slower. But once you've nailed everything, you're talking to your clients are on board, your team are on board, your processes are all chat are all tested. Every other client from that point picks up speed. So finally, I just wanted to say, and I hope that was some interest, and obviously you can access this information online through our website, but I also just wanted to go back to our research, which was, if you do this correctly, this is some of the proof in the pudding. So we did this research with Business Health, where 135 practices ran through the Business Health check, came up with their collective view on their business success. 72 of those did managed accounts and the rest didn't. So a really good balance between the two. And here are some of the startling figures. These are some of the uplift factors. Revenue per advisor was on average 22.6%, profit 21.3%, profit per client 23.8%, and advisors per client up by 12.4%, dealing with more clients more profitably with greater revenue. Now, those are some of the things that obviously make sense, that if we're going to manage account, we're going to become efficient, we're going to have some increase in uplift factors. But the final thing to consider is this slide here, which is the length of time using managed accounts versus the proportion of clients invested in managed accounts. And that is that the length of managed accounts, more than 3 years, is a 34% uplift. But actually, when you take the final figure, which I mentioned at the beginning, the proportion of clients invested in managed accounts, as in more than 75% of your clients, will increase profit by up to 85%. And that is those practices that have followed a good change management process, that have embraced the change as a business and made a significant change to their advice model, investment model, technology providers, and hopefully provide some final thought process for you to say, if you do it well, follow some really considered processes, and engage this as a business solution, you're going to have some major impacts. And that's my presentation finished for today, which I hope you found valuable. And David, I don't know if there's any questions.